dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome back to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk online radio show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, joined once again this week by Jeremy Ward. And Jeremy, I guess as I look through the inbox and I sort through the phone here and all the text messages and the different things, some great feedback this week. And I guess scheduling is what's on the mind of so many people, be it the all-day event, the Friday-Saturday boys format. Some really fun discussion. I think let's start with the all-day event. For those of you not familiar with what we're referring to, basically two times a year, the same two schools in round one and round two, and they do it that way so that each school gets a chance to be the home team. They basically go with an all-day event starting somewhere in the afternoon with a freshman boys and a JV boys, followed by some JV girls basketball, the varsity girls and the varsity boys. And the idea was to kind of give each school a chance to just showcase all of their high school basketball players and both the boys and girls program, and give people a chance at one price to just kind of stay all day and get a chance to do that in one sitting, if you will, rather than trying to get out and about throughout the week with the hectic schedules. And you know, Jeremy, as I look at the all-day event, I guess the biggest negative thing that comes back could be summarized in time, in terms of the times and the format, the way the day's laid out. I'm talking to so many ADs and coaches and fans and so forth. I know I had about four or five coaches on the boys and girls give us some feedback. I know I had a couple ADs, one principal. I guess if you look at it from a fan, or if you look at it from a parent in past, or however you'd want to look at it, would you agree that maybe time seems to be the number one negative, no matter how you want to sum it up? That would probably be the category that would jump out at you first?
No question about it. I've kind of played the role of fan, parent, official, and no doubt about that. Time causes the biggest concern, just the uncertainty. How difficult it is to communicate, whether or not, I mean, sometimes you only have a day's notice with whether or not they're playing freshman boys or JV girls, and we've talked about those problems in the past. But more than that, you just, you know, you don't have control over the variables when you're talking about four or five basketball games. But when you have, you know, varsity boys game starting closer to 6 o'clock than 8 o'clock, it just doesn't seem right. I don't know how you put parents, grandparents, relatives. I mean, the benefit from a family situation, if you've got multiple kids playing maybe at multiple schools, or, you know, boys and girls both playing, what could be something that's really awesome could turn into a nightmare, because you could go from thinking you could see, you know, a couple of your grandkids play or whatever it may be, and end up running around and missing everything. So that, no question, is the biggest factor.
Well, it certainly is. And I guess the first thing you'd want to do with a problem is take a look at the solution. And I know that there's been some coaches and some different people kind of throw this out. The one thing they've shared in terms of the fix might be a set schedule. And what I mean by set schedule is saying that instead of using like a lot of people might refer to as a rolling clock, just to have set times. And that you can't be early. You can only be late. So what they mean by that is if the game's at 1, 2:30, 4, 5:30, 7, that's when you're going to start. And now that was what was sent in to me. I might tweak that a little bit to more like a 1, 2:20, 3:40, 5:15, 7. But those would be just minor debatable things that you could sort out. But I certainly, Jeremy, think a fixed schedule where you say here's the absolute earliest time that a game can start would definitely solve a lot of these issues that an official, a fan, a coach who has to answer boatloads of questions about this could solve a lot of those. Would you agree with that?
I do agree. I think that's another part of time that you don't really think about. You're putting the coaches, the administrators, the bus drivers, janitors. You're talking about all kinds of different people that are going to spend a lot of time answering questions about time.
Yeah.
So this doesn't make sense, really.
Well, the other negative that comes along to me is it, the day's just too long. I know some of the coaches, particularly on the boys' side, are not crazy about the freshman JV playing and then sitting. So you have a kid that plays JV and varsity both, they're sitting for so long. Some have been a little bit more outspoken about it than others in terms of the order of the games. I know the busing, the locker room. See, I think some schools are better suited for the locker room situation. Some schools handle their busing better than others. The way I've always looked at this is in your busing budget for the year, usually your boys are going to take a freshman JV bus and a varsity bus, and a lot of times your varsity girls and JV girls are going together. So really the busing shouldn't change, but I honestly think some of the schools have tried to maybe use some cuts there that probably added to the frustration. I guess, Jeremy, here's my take here. Let me throw this at you because from an administrator, this is some great discussion. I guess if I look at 16 programs, and let's just say about 20, I'll say over 20 maybe in the boys program, 15 or 16 on the girls. So let's say about 300 basketball players across the SVC, give or take. I guess when we always say, you always hear this catchphrase in education, it kind of gets to me a little bit when they say, oh, whatever's best for the kids. Well, when you're talking about 300 kids, I don't know that there's going to be a solution that's going to be the best for 300 kids, but I think you have to be careful making quick decisions or taking away ideas that could be tweaked to become pretty good just to maybe because, say, 2-4% of those kids are being hurt from that. When I think, as we're going to talk about here in a second, there's a lot more positives. Do you agree in terms of that that ratio, if you will, when you start talking about solutions, when you talk about 300 different kids involved?
Yeah, I do. I agree with that. I think there are a lot of factors that play into it, but kind of transitioning into one of the biggest positives, which is the atmosphere that's created and the opportunity to have your varsity boys and your varsity girls playing the marquee games in the nighttime slots. The negatives are coming earlier in the day. All those problems that you're talking about are created earlier in the day. So, maybe the easiest fix, if you will, is just to concentrate on this being, a varsity doubleheader, and maybe we lose. Maybe we'll take the freshmen, the JV, and the JV girls, and maybe we stick those games over Christmas break, where it seems like there's a bunch of days that we don't play, which I look at another problem in the scheduling. So maybe you can kill two birds with one stone, so to speak, and still get the atmosphere fear, still get the some of the positives, and make some adjustments for the negative.
Well, that's certainly an interesting solution. I know there's no doubt, as I've asked through the girls' league, I would say the majority, and again, not all, but the majority definitely thought the girls' atmosphere was the best that they've played in. Talking to Coach Snyder, Coach Jones there, the Huntington Zane Trace girls' atmosphere the other night was unlike anything I've seen. Coach Carino kind of agreed with that over at Uniota. Coach Miller, who obviously with the success of their program and the size of their school and then playing some of the size of schools that they do outside of conference, he said it was a great atmosphere, easily top three they've played. Now, some of the other coaches, maybe it didn't work out that way. I understand that the Southeastern Paint Valley atmosphere was pretty good. I know Adina at Westfall had some scheduling situations with the JV girls game not being played, I believe. Is that correct, Jeremy? No JV game that day, and girls?
No JV girls that day. They did play freshman boys, but that was even up in the air early on, and I think they were able to make that go because, I think one of those freshman boys teams only have five kids. So, but they were able to play.
Well,
I think
guess
what
my,
you see, and you're talking about atmosphere. Obviously, Huntington with the Hall of Fame, it made it really just a special night for a lot of people in an electric atmosphere. I know I was a part of that before, when I was coaching varsity and Matt was coaching varsity boys, where we on Hall of Fame night, we did that. We did a varsity girls, varsity boys combo. And you just had a packed house, an unreal, type of atmosphere. And I know from Matt's perspective, you know, some of the negatives, it just took his kids out of rhythm. It made it a kind of a different night. It took them out of rhythm, if you will, but he would have much rather had it all happen in one night instead of it happened three times during the year. With various things going on. So, you know, that's another part of it. I think some schools have taken advantage of those situations in the all day event to go ahead and do some of their, you know, special activities, honoring teams or Hall of Fame.
Well, I think you make a great point about the community. I know that also happened at Huntington with some Little League girls playing. I know Craig Kearns, the principal over at Edina, talked about how they were able to bring some Little League teams in and play, right, and that added to the environment. I think community, you get a great chance for your Hall of Fame night, a great chance for fundraising, and a great chance to maybe sell some things. I also know Coach Holland, the AD out of Paint Valley, talked about how the gate was still pretty good and how it really helps from a financial standpoint in terms of cutting back one night in terms of maintenance and some different things you pay for at each game. So I think there's some things there. Coach Kearns talked about scheduling, how it frees up a night during the week. Well, I call him Coach Kearns just because that's how I know. But you know, Craig was telling me that it frees up some things throughout the week in terms of they were able to get a junior high makeup game in there. They were able to do some things for wrestling. So now, with all that said, I want to be fair here. Craig also went on to say, I know Coach Carino, even after being very positive, went on to say, Coach Jones, after being very positive, went on to say, they are all concerned. They weren't against it, but they were all concerned with some of the different times and scheduling that we mentioned in our lead in here. So I guess that brings me to my bottom line. Will it remain? And I guess right now it's a school to school with it. It's kind of how are you going to handle your busing, your community involvement, the locker room facilities, you know, and when ADs get together and so forth, I guess they're probably going to look at some financial things. They're probably going to look at, again, what we like to say in education is what's best for the kids. And I guess it's going to be depending on what kids we're talking about. So, you know, Jeremy, just in closing, before we move into our first break here, just what would you like to see the league, now that they've had a sample size of it, what would you like to see them do? Cut it out completely, tweak it a little bit, do some different things? What would be your thoughts?
I think just really examine it and get a lot of feedback. You know, all the reasons that we brought up from what you got from coaches, administrators, ADs, etc., and just really sit down and think about, you know, how can we accentuate the positives and maybe tweak the negatives to make it work. I do think it's a good thing. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, the Saturday games in general. You know, you're always fighting a little bit with tradition. So are you trying to create new traditions or are you trying to get rid of tradition? You know what I mean? You're always going to have people that question, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, what's the tradition in the league?
Well, and, you know, Jeremy, I don't want to get too much on a soapbox here. I don't want to get too much ahead of our agenda tonight because we will touch on this later. But I tell you one thing, it kind of came up in conversation the other day, and it does have me concerned as someone that loves the SPC and loves the game of basketball as much as I do. This almost gives me maybe a peek ahead of what has scared me for some time now, looking 5-10 years down the line. You almost wonder how close is the SPC because of numbers and participation to where freshman boys and JV girls become more of that independent schedule, if you will, say like a freshman volleyball team. Are they going to become that, you know, side to where – Or is it going to be a situation where we end up with no JV girls league to where 7th, 8th, and 9th grade are now going to start to play some triple headers of 6-minute quarters and so forth, and it's going to be only a JV boys, varsity girls, varsity boys? So these are all things that concern me anyway. I guess when I look at these particular schedules and how we promote the league and do certain things, I think that these are very, very important decisions. So I am glad to see people willing to comment and get involved and have their voice heard. So I think it's great discussion. I want to encourage fans to let us know. You can contact me in the inbox, admin1@svcsportzone.com, or give me a call, 740-569 3254. Leave us a voice message. We'll get you on SVC Sports Talk. So great discussion. Jeremy, I'll tell you what, on the topic of speaking about boys and girls here at the same time in terms of basketball, I had an interesting liar, stripes on fire question that might make people a little uncomfortable in 2015. Well, Jeremy, liar, stripes on fire, brought to you the fans by Crown Hill Golf Club, the Westfall home course up in the northern part of the Side Valley Conference, and at 740-986-GOLF. That's 740-986-4653. And Jeremy, you and I got our golf fix a little bit yesterday, getting to go up to Columbus a little bit, look around, and I know you're able to make a nice purchase there that you're probably dying to try out. But each time we record this show, I'm always sitting here in front of my golf clubs, and again, that makes me kind of have the itch to go swing a little bit. And fans, you can do that again at 740-986-GOLF. Ask for Dave or Kevin. Tell them SBCSportsZone.com sent you. Well, Jeremy, I'm the liar, stripes on fire. We're talking the training of officials, the classifications. Some people want to know, is it tough enough? Is it too hard? What are some of the levels, the different classifications of the Little League, Junior High, JV, Varsity? I even had someone go as far to say, do you think it should be different as you get into the Varsity Girls level compared to the Varsity Boys? I'll just kind of open all of that up to you in discussion here and talk to us a little bit about the classifications.
Classification-wise, there are three for the state of Ohio. A Class 3 official would be like a student. And we've had a handful, two of the, you know, what are now highly rated officials in the Southeast District that are in their early 20s. Both of these guys were Class 3s, did a lot of lower level junior high, freshman JV when they were actually still in high school. And, you know, that's a tough position to be in when, you know, sure, you might be just a year or two older. But obviously you go through a lot if you're willing to do that, and you know, you mature quickly as far as being an official, because you'd have to do it, you have to want to do it awfully badly, and you know, want to be pretty good if you're willing to put yourself in that situation as a high school, you know, junior, senior. Class 2 official is, you know, anybody that's 18 or older, out of school, and in their first few years of experience. In order to get to a Class 1, you have to have 2 years minimum at the lower levels, you know, at that Class 2 or Class 3 situation. To be a Class 1, you have to be evaluated throughout the year by, you know, other Class 1 officials. Usually it's done by some sort of an evaluator, whether it's one of the state guys that puts on the classes, or head of an association, whether it's the, you know, Chillicothe Area Basketball Association, you know, one of their president, vice president, rules interpreter, you know, someone with somewhat of a title are usually right, the ones that evaluate you. And then you have to pass another test. You know, the first round of testing, you take hours and hours of classes, go over the rules, and, you know, you kind of work through things together. You have the opportunity to look up the information as you're taking your test, you know, because the goal is to get you out and get some practical application, because you could spend hundreds of hours reading about it, but you know, until you get out there and actually see it done, you don't have that. So to be a Class 1 official, the test is, there's two parts, and one's basically rules, and you know, the other is, you know, situational casebooks, you know, type of things where you're applying your knowledge with the situation. And, you know, it's a much, much more difficult test to be a Class 1. And you obviously have to have some support for higher level officials. So, you know, in our immediate area, we have a lot of officials that are still Class 2s. They have no interest in being varsity officials. They spend, you know, hours and hours and hours with our youth leagues and at the junior high level, freshman JV. And, you know, they're very content with that. And that's all they want out of it. So, you know, there's definitely a different set of circumstances if you want to be a Class 1 official. But, you know, even at that, I would say, you know, probably only two-thirds of the Class 1 officials throughout the district are who you are likely to see on a given night for varsity games. And, you know, you talk about the difference, boys to girls. You know, there are a lot of officials that just do girls games, that they don't do a lot of boys games, and there's other officials that do a lot of boys games that do very few girls games, and that could be for various reasons. You know, I can tell you because it affects me, you know, in my situation in the SVC, when you start at 5 o'clock on those weekday games in varsity girls, right, you know, even though they're 5 o'clock JV starts, you're still really limiting your pool of officials. Because you're not going to have your choice of everybody. They're not going to be able to travel, you know, an hour or more than an hour to do a game that may start at 6:15 or even earlier when we have the good old two-quarter classics. So,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of variables there. So, you know, just some things there to hopefully that sheds some light. You know, as far as it being tough enough, too hard, whatever, I mean, it's just like anything else, is what you put into it. I mean,
right.
You know the minimum requirements, you figure out a way to get through that and to know what you need to know to pass your test. And obviously, you got to be pretty committed if you want to be a Class 1 official.
Sure. Well, a two-part question here, maybe, Jeremy, because I was just trying to collect some ideas as you were going through that stuff. I guess I look at it like, yes, take the fan out of it, because the fan's way too subjective. But from official to official, you know, you might look at their techniques and what are they calling? Are their hand signals right? Are they in the right area? Are they making the right calls? I know sometimes it's interesting just to sit with you at a game and you'll make a comment about, oh, hey, I was really good officiating there. He did this, and this. And then, you know, as a coach, you know, you always want the game to be called, obviously, in your favor, so you probably become a little subjective too. But overall professionalism, the talk and the different things and the relationships, and then, you know, maybe an AD's looking at a guy on time, dependable, not going to call you at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and said, oh, by the way, I'm not coming, crowd control, that type of thing. I guess if you put it all together, that's probably all of those things together is probably what makes a great official. One, would you agree? And two, is it like playing basketball from the standpoint of, even though you might be a little uncomfortable, if I put three really good officials together, they're going to be able to go out there on a drop of a dime and kind of make it work. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, yeah, I think that's a fair statement. I mean, just like anything else, you know, you're going to have your exceptionally good night and your exceptionally bad night. And I think at the end of the day, it's just like it is just like anything else. It's just like a good player or a great player. You're going to have fewer and fewer bad nights.
Right.
You're going to be a lot more consistent.
Your bad nights, you're going to find a way to still make it, you know, happen, right, at a successful level. Right.
Exactly. And you're going to take your duties in your professionalism, you're going to take that seriously. You know, personality is involved, and it's no different than the coaches. And, you know, I think a lot of people would say, well, you know, that particular coach, well, he just whines all the time, or he's just so loud. You know, he aggravates me, or, you know, look at the way he's treating officials. Well, to me, a lot more of that's personality. And I think that's just because I've been able to look at things in different ways. So if I know the personality or learn the personality of a coach, then I approach them a little bit differently. And I would hope they would do the same to me. You know, I'm not going to talk to them all night. I'm not going to, you know, smile and show a lot of emotion. I'm just going to try to not be seen.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to try to blend in. And other officials, they want everybody to know that they're really enjoying themselves and really having a good time. And there's something to be said for that. That's not my personality. But just because one coach is quiet and one coach is loud doesn't mean that one's necessarily better than the other. And I think that's true of officials. But it's the same way, you know, when your perception, especially if they're not your coach or anybody that you know, the more attention they draw to themselves, you know, the more they are subject to others' opinions.
Right. Well, good stuff as always. And that segment that we call Liar Liar Stripes on Fire fans, you can send that into admin1@svcsportzone.com. And a lot of times we get backed up on those and definitely like to look for some of the ones that we think are going to generate the best discussion. You know, Jeremy, with the girls being 11 games in and the guys being well into the second round, the annual debate of POI and All League has started. And this year's debate is a great example of how some questions simply do not have a right answer. SVC Player of the Year, Jeremy, as well as All League selections. We are getting closer and closer to that time, and it's pretty much like clockwork. Right around this time of year, we'll always get some people in the inbox, or I'll get some people out at the ball games want to start to talk a little bit. Well, hey, how would you vote this? How would you do this? And this particular email was kind of a two-parter where it's asking the boys and the girls, and it was a pretty long one. I'll just kind of summarize the overall thoughts. Let's start ladies first here, Jeremy. We'll talk on the girls' side. Wants to know about the POI. Is it overly for sure? Has Skeens done enough? Rest of the first team. Lawhorn had the hot first half. Sam's, Wheeler, Unio to get a second, question mark. Westfall one or two. He even threw Unger's name in there. So I guess when we look at that, I guess this is always a tough discussion. Maybe it's too early to say. Maybe it's not. The girls' league still has questions in terms of the standings. Obviously, Uniota, Westfall's trying to hold serve to see if they can't still get a shot. The Huntington-Piketon games are going to have a lot to say with the standings. Huntington still has another Payne Valley game. Huntington still plays Southeastern. So that there's still some things out there for debate. I know the email mentioned Sam's, who's had a nice stretch here late, especially in some wins. Wheeler's obviously had a good year. If Uniota wins that gold ball, I could certainly see why they're asking about the second there on the first team. And then Westfall, you know, Robinson's had a good year in leading the way for a team that has four kids averaging nine or more. So I guess the interesting thing for coaches is if you look at it now, you might have a certain opinion, but obviously a lot could change, couldn't it, Jeremy, in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, no question. I mean, it's a little bit early. You know, if we're going to talk about at the midpoint, I have no problem with that. But I think we have the same discussion every year, and I think I pretty much have the same answer every year. I don't get too excited about it until we have a little greater body of work. And you know, kids are being put in different situations. I mean, certain teams are gonna have to handle adversity, whether it's injuries, a losing streak, you know, whatever it may be. I just think you know, you're asking for trouble a little bit when you get too excited. But just as far as addressing the question, I think girls wise player of the year, you know, right now it's pretty easy. It's going to be Lexi Overly. Not saying that you know, that couldn't change over the back stretch, but I'd say she's running in front of the pack. All those in the mention for first team, you know, I think dead on, great conversation. We have the same conversation about Westfall as we did last year. You know, kind of depending on what you look at, and probably, you know, some of us that have point guard bias are going to have a biased opinion, sure. You know, maybe Robinson over some of the others because, you know, whatever it may be. And I think you see the same thing with former post players. They tend to have that post bias. But, you know, no question about it. It's to me, it's great to see more numbers. I mean, it was really kind of discouraging the past few years when you're talking about, you know, only having a handful of kids averaging in double figures, only having a handful of teams able to score more than 40 points a game. You know, just the overall basketball is a lot better, and the talent of players is a lot better. And just seeing the development of some of the kids this year has been impressive.
Jeremy, let me throw something out at you that was asked to me the other day. And you know, I really tried to stop and think about it and really answer in detail. It was as much detail as possible. They were talking about an interesting thing from a coach's perspective. You know, if you game plan and load up on someone, and maybe you do contain them or in some cases shut them down, and as a result, you know, maybe another player on that team ends up scoring a little bit over their average, but in the end you're successful or maybe not successful, do you still vote for that elite player? In other words, if a player is good enough, I guess what they were asking me is, if a player is good enough for you to go box in one or triangle in two or to run a defender at to make them give it up, regardless of the statistical outcome, does your respect for that kid in terms of being a great player still warrant a vote? How would you respond to that particular discussion?
Well, it really depends. I mean, sometimes you'll see that, you know, again, especially it does vary by position, but especially the primary ball handler, whether it's a true point guard or whether it's just, you know, the main guard, if they're also the biggest scorer and you do things that take them away and they create all kinds of opportunities for other players, and the game still ends up about where you thought it would, you know, even though maybe that player scores 6 or 8 points instead of 16 or 18. Now all of a sudden that kid that averages 10 has 18 and the kid that averages 8 has 14. And, you know, you're shaking your head because you pretty much got the same outcome if you'd have just played him straight up.
Right.
Now, I guess the true question comes in, if you have somebody that's putting up monster numbers against the bottom two thirds of the league and then, you know, has a different, entirely different offensive output or a statistical output against the top three teams and say they're in the middle of the pack, well, then maybe the statistics aren't telling the whole story. Mm-hmm. But in fairness, you know, we had that debate in volleyball, you know, which statistics do you pay attention to? And at the end of the day, if you decided to game plan that much for that player, then you must have thought pretty highly of them.
Well, no question about it. And as always, as we're having this all league, you always have to look at it as a numbers game. You know, when you just in this email alone, I'm reading Overly, Skeens, Lawhorn, Sams, Wheeler, Uniota second, which I guess would be a Taylor Overly, Westfall with Robinson, but we know Stone Rock and Mathis and Fox. And, mm-hmm. You know, we haven't even mentioned some of the other kids. You know, they mentioned Unger in the email. What happens is certainly just a numbers game. Only five are going to make first team. Only five more are going to make second team, and that certainly plays into it as well. So as I look into the boys' side, it says, how about the boys? It says, Mowry is my front runner, and it's asking, do we agree or should Uniota get with team success? Because it was going on to say, if Uniota goes 22-0, should they not have the player of the year? It says, if Mowry gets it, Uniota could get two or three on first team, question mark. How about Thomas, Shanks, McCloy, Stratton, Brewster, Cartier? All have done enough to be in discussion, and another 10 players could make case for top 15. And the email simply ended with the word crazy. So it is. We've talked about the boys' side, Jeremy, throughout the year, and I guess it is tough. I guess if I'm going to be consistent, a year ago when I was picking my player of the year, I simply thought Mowry was the best player. So if I had Mowry last year and you see what he's doing this year, by the way, congratulations to him, 37 the other night as he passes 1,000. You know, Jeremy, I'd have to go back and research. I believe he is the fastest to 1,000 in SBC history. I'd love for someone on the boys' side to dispute that with me, but I believe he is the fastest to that point He needed 21 the other night. He came out in the first half, scored 23. I believe it was 7 threes. And he was just in rhythm. I tell you, it just looked like he could throw it up from anywhere. The basket must have looked really big to him. So, again, congratulations to him. But as I return to the email here, Jeremy, I guess for me, if you're talking about an individual honor here, I would still go with him. But, man, if Uniota were to go to the 14-0 in the league, or especially 22-0, you can certainly understand the discussion of the team success and not only the player of the year, but possibly maybe even getting four or as many as five on the top 15. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think that's a good point. I look at this again. We've been in this situation in volleyball this past year where you've got more kids than you do spots, and just because you might have one or two that end up, you know, not on first team or maybe honorable mention, you know, as you go on down the line, doesn't mean that they're not all league caliber players. I think there's been a few years where, you know, you're just trying to, you know, you're arguing over those last three spots, but they're a far cry from the top 12, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. Very interesting with Uniota, considering that they're three games up on everybody. You know, what if they end up winning the league by, you know, the second place team has five losses? I mean, that's sure. Really possible.
And it very well could be, because keep in mind, second through seventh place only, I don't have that in front of me. I want to say it's 5-3 to 3-5. Is that all it separates, second and seventh?
That was going into Saturday. I think that changed a little bit, but, you know, you're looking at a situation where
I apologize. 6-3 to 3-6. That was in there. Yeah. You're right. I'm sorry. Yes.
So with Uniota, I don't know. You can certainly make an argument. You know, maybe not as easily as you did last year with Corcoran and the numbers he put up. But if you remember, yeah, he just got crazy hot the last.
Yes, he did. He did
the last five games of the season. So, you know, we're not even, you know, we're still.
And he was making a lot of winning plays down the stretch. But as of now, Uniota hasn't had a game under 10, if I'm not mistaken. Right. So there's not a whole lot of plays down the stretch to make.
Right, exactly. So, and their overall consistency has been really just phenomenal. And the fact that they find a way, no matter what you do, they keep it where it needs to be. They either jump way out in the first quarter and you battle your way out, and then you run out of gas and they run away from you in the fourth, or you know, they kind of play with you and let you in it to the fourth quarter and then run away from you then. But either way, it always kind of ends in the same theme. But you're having some great individual season. You're going to have kids that were, you know, you talked a lot about last year being first teamers, putting up nearly the same numbers, but maybe not getting the same attention. So sure. It is crazy, man. I think that's the best part of that email. It's crazy.
Well, let's do the numbers game again, Jeremy. I came up when I was looking at this email and just trying to even sort my thoughts out, because to be honest, it's the first time I'd actually put some names down. I had 23 potential kids that if I were to base what I looked at as an all-league talent, I had 23 kids down. I mean, there's only 15 spots. So obviously you're going to have almost half of another list that's left off of the list. So when I look at that particular thing, it lets me know how hard it's going to be. And the other thing that jumped out at me, I guess this is what you're referring to a little bit from year to year. There's been kids that have been all league in the past that are better players now, mm-hmm. that may not even make a team. Yeah, and a lot of it comes down to their teams getting better. Their role is evolving a little bit, so they're becoming better all-around players. But that's bizarre. I think it's something that'll be really fun to sort out, and it'll be real interesting, because I think what you're going to find is you're going to see a lot of people say, well, when I watched Westfall play, I thought Anderson was their best player. No, when I watched him play, I thought Wyman was their best player. Oh, really? I thought the night I watched him, Mink was. You know, it's one of those things where Westfall probably only gets one spot. Who's it going to be? It doesn't mean the other two players are bad players. It just means it's a numbers game. And I think that's what that example I'm using with Westfall, Jeremy, couldn't I use that with five, six different schools?
You certainly could. You certainly could. And I think you could. You know, you can make an argument that every player that we've mentioned, you know, has gotten better, you know, in a lot of ways, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to move up on the all-league list.
Well, Jeremy, while we're on the talk of a lot of basketball here, let's get right into our fast break. And once again, let's have this brought to our fans by Crown Hill Golf Club. Again, fans, let's take care of that golfing itch. Let's get on the phone, 740-986-GOLF. That's 740-986-4653. Ask for Dave or Kevin. Tell them SBCSportsZone.com sent you. You're going to love the simulator indoors up there. A lot of fun. Get up there and swing the golf club a little bit. Get ready for spring. Well, Jeremy, as we get into the fast break this week, let's go ahead and have you go first. I will follow. Bruce, what do you have for us this week?
One email noticed more coaches going to these stat programs that give every detail you can imagine about a game. Is there a single statistical category that you think leads to the final score more than others?
Well, it is interesting, especially look at those programs, and it's kind of like, you know, the texting jargon and the shorthand. You get all these little weird words that you're trying to figure out what they mean, acronyms. But, you know, I did a lot of research on this when I started coaching varsity basketball, and I spent some time on this today just kind of looking up, you know, research again. And I'm still committed to overall field goal percentage. I mean, obviously better teams get better shots and probably more shots, more layups, whatever. But overall field goal percentage, I think, is the most important category.
But Jeremy, I don't think we're that far off on this. I guess I look at shot attempts. Obviously, it helps if you make them, because as Bruce was saying sarcastically in our opening, he's like, am I allowed to answer points, you know, as being the number one statistical category. And with shot attempts, I always look at turnovers, rebounding, and if you're winning those and you're getting more shots on goal, as we like to say, the chance of making those shots go. But again, I can't disagree with the field goal percentage, because I also look at, you know, assists with turnovers and made baskets, and a lot of times it tells you how much the team's sharing the ball. It leads to those easier field goals. So, see, I think we're not that far off there on the way I would maybe look at a stat sheet.
What is flying under the radar as the hidden story in this year's SVC basketball storylines?
Well, as you look, especially in the middle of the races, whether it's boys or girls, where, you know, we've had some outstanding games, it's really been the significance of the role players and the overall improvement for a lot of the teams in the league. You know, starting with Unieta on top, you know, you got kids like Strange and Swackhammer. You know, you go back to our whole league discussion, they certainly have that kind of talent to be all league level players. But man, their production just makes a huge difference. And Caleb Peel on the girls' side, you know, the same way. At Zane Trace, you've got Nesser and the boys, Jones and the girls. And, you know, when they play well, good things happen. You know, Kelly Fox at Westfall, much in the same role she's played in volleyball and softball, maybe on the periphery, but man, she shows up and plays hard every day. Avery Reuter and Veach and even Jordan at Piketon, certainly X factors when they're able to compete with the top teams. Carlon Cox and Vining at Huntington, you know, certainly when they produce, it takes them to another level, and they're able to compete with teams. You know, the best, I guess, if you look at the best games that those teams have played, you know, kids like that have produced. Corey at Adina, much the same. And lately, Collins on the girls' side from Southeastern. I think all these players are X factors.
Well, Jeremy, that's an outstanding answer, you know, because when you think of hidden story, we spent so much time with the boys' league with guard play and the Unieta gold factors on both sides, 1,000-point scores. I guess when I listen to your answer, it takes me back to something I touched on earlier in terms of the generation where we've talked so much about AAU and what I consider the disaster of Little League and the different culture of the 1,000-point scores. I guess I worry about is the long-term influence of those types of players you just mentioned going to get developed as much. And I was looking through my wife's scrapbook the other day back in 1994. There was a basketball team in the league that had two Division I players, a 1,000-point score, and a third-teamer, and they didn't win the league. The fourth-place team in the league won the state championship. So, I mean, it's bizarre to look back through some of the different things happening and looking generation to generation, and you just kind of hope full circle as we talked about the enrollment, we talked about the different things and the way we do things and how the Little League program leads up through the freshman and the JV programs. You hope those types of players you just named are going to be able to still be developed in the long term.
There has been a lot of talk about the Friday-Saturday format in the Boys' League and the impact it can have on the SVC race. Are you a fan of this format?
Never been a fan. I completely understand the tradition, but I don't see the advantages. I'd much rather see a 10 Friday night and 4 Tuesday format like most conferences do.
Well, Jeremy, don't have to disagree with you. I love it. I just fell in love completely with it as a player, and maybe that's why, because as a player I didn't know any better. I still like it as a fan. I understand as a coach it's tough, but I tell you, I love the game planning. I love the late Friday nights to get ready on a Saturday. I used to kind of plan both game plans throughout the week. Never talked to my kids about it, but after Friday night game, hey, take this home, be ready, go tomorrow morning, shoot around. I know people will say it takes the coach out of it a little bit and the players are supposed to play, but then again, isn't that okay sometimes in finding a conference championship? So I was blessed to be on some pretty talented teams, and so I'm sure it was in our favor. I'm a little bit old school with the SVC here. I love it.
That doesn't surprise me, you know, coming from somebody that, played on some really good teams. You didn't need anybody having extra time to prepare for you. You know, you're right. It does give the advantage to the better team. So I can see our disagreement.
Well, Jeremy, since that's kind of a good discussion point here, let's go ahead and revisit number 3 there a little bit. I had incredible feedback from around the league. Dave Shoemaker, who's had a lot of experience into the past, he says he's not a huge fan of it. Obviously, when you have a team without great depth, a lot of times Saturday night can become really difficult. Even a Mad Hoops, who benefits from it a lot now because of his depth. Let's face it, Uniota would be a bear to play on Saturday night right now. Even he says he's not the biggest fan of it. Jason Smith said no. Now, Todd Keller did seem in favor of it. Alan Coker said not really. You know, again, it's one of those things you'd like to have preparation. Coach Cox and I, Jaron Cox, we had some nice dialogue back and forth about some of the different strategies. He's not a huge fan of it, but we talked a little bit about how it helps, and he talked about balancing some time with the family and doing film work on the weekends and so forth, how that really would get tough. I guess my take here, Jeremy, most of them are saying Tuesday, Friday. And if you go Tuesday, Friday, I guess that means you're going to put the girls back to a Thursday night, and I guess you're going to have to go Saturday afternoon. And I guess that's a whole nother discussion that would start to form because of that. I guess in short, as you hear Tuesday night, Friday night, and then Thursday, Saturday for girls, is that something that you'd be more in favor of? I'm assuming yes, based on your answer there, number 3.
I say yes, but if you look at the schedule and the way it breaks out, you could alternate your Tuesdays, and basically girls are always Thursday, boys are always Friday, and get your 10 in that way. And then there are I believe at least at minimum there's going to be 11 Tuesdays that you have to play with, and you're only trying to play 8 games. So even if you don't like the Saturday afternoon option for the girls, I think there's a balance there. I guess my thing is this, and being a baseball guy, if you don't make teams play back to back in baseball for pitching, why in the world do you make them play back to back in basketball?
Well, but you understand in baseball it's naturally going to happen. You're going to play Monday, Wednesday, Friday, wink, wink. I mean, because the weather in Ohio, there's at least going to be 2 different times in the year where you're going to play 3 straight nights. I guess I look at it from a standpoint. I certainly understand why coaches would want to stretch it out and have their hands in on game plans and different things. So I get all that. I think that the Friday, Saturday is the ultimate test. Now, this year, would Uniota be the best team if you played, Sunday morning at 8 or Thursday at 4 or whenever? Yeah. But there's a lot of times where I think it would be interesting just to see if For example, take Uniote out of this year's league and imagine where this league would be in terms of competition. The Friday-Saturday really offers you a great opportunity sometimes to see a variety. Because I've always thought that the ultimate test of a champion is, can you win in a lot of different atmospheres and a lot of different situations and a lot of different things? So, yeah, again, I know I'm old school there. I kind of like it, but that's my take. Right.
And I know we've had the conversation before about whether or not, you know, if that's what you do, then do it all the time.
Yes.
That really hasn't been the case. And then I think it makes for what's essentially an unbalanced schedule when you're making some teams play back-to-back against two really good opponents and others, you know, maybe do not. That can have a huge impact on the middle of the league when you only have, you know, a handful of Friday-Saturday combos and then you spread it out the rest of the year, kind of like it has been this year.
Well, fans, we've mentioned the inbox at admin1@sbcsportszone.com. I even mentioned the 740-569-3254 to leave us a voice message. Definitely don't want to forget about Facebook, Twitter. Make sure you're following along with us there, because you really get some great discussion, some great game updates, some different things. I know, Jeremy, you've really had some nice feedback with some articles and some different things. And we were talking about the feedback last week. We were talking about crowd behavior. And I guess with some of the different times with social media, it was brought to my attention this week that artificial relationships, I believe I'm quoting the person correctly, they almost talked about how relationships seem more fake across the league. So where people get maybe more offended, there's a lot more conversation where, you know, 15, 20 years ago, we didn't know as many people at that particular school or different things going on. It was more of just that was our opponent or whatever. Do you see that a little bit with social media today where, you know, yeah, I'm friends with that person. Oh, really?
Right.
Well, no, actually, you talk to them on the computer once every 2 weeks. I mean, do you see that a little bit and how that can relate over into sports?
Yeah, and I think you guys had the conversations in the past about, like, your rivals. Like, there used to be this, you know, firm line that, you know, that those are not my friends. And why aren't they your friends? Well, because they go to Zane Trace or because they go to
Huntington, like if Facebook existed like in 1995, yeah, like you just wouldn't be friends with someone from Zane Trace. It just wouldn't happen.
Right. And the argument would be, oh, because this kind of takes that down, because you know more about people. You used to be easy because all you knew is they went to school there, so that was reason enough not to like them. Well, now you might see that they do the same things you do, and it kind of gets rid of some of the animosity. So I think that's a little bit of it. It is different times. It creates different type of rivalries. You know, whether it's good or bad, I don't have any idea, but it's definitely nowhere near the same as what it was in the past.
Well, one email was, the person was just completely appalled at the comment last week about how a lot of the administrators seemed to come across to me as wanting us not to have the competition for student sections. And again, I want to clarify, I never had someone come out and say, hey, really wish you wouldn't do that. I'd like to see you take it all. I'm just saying that, you know, I try to pick, you know, as an educator myself, as a coach, as someone does the website, I try to pick my battles, take the hints, if you will. And it's just got to a point where maybe that wasn't the way I wanted to go, and maybe I'm being a little bit hypocritical in taking that off with a question I'm going to ask you here in a little bit. But I guess, Jeremy, I'll ask you this, fair or unfair. As an administrator, sometimes does an administrator maybe want to keep the line moving, so to speak? I know sarcastically sometimes I say we've got to be careful not to let Tuesday become Wednesday and January become June. But do they try to sometimes maybe just avoid controversy or squash debatable topics as soon as possible, and as a result maybe hinder some things that could maybe be very beneficial to the student body?
Well, that's certainly fair. You know, again, I think we made the comment before. You know, it's easy for us from a sports perspective to think it's really important for the principals to sit down and create policy in regards to the conference athletics, or, you know, how we're going to handle, you know, the pep club or the student section at the basketball game, the football game, what have you. But in the grand scheme of things, that's a very, very small part of their job. So from that regard, It's easy maybe to dismiss and easy to say, hey, you know what? It'd just be a heck of a lot better if I didn't have to deal with that. So, maybe it is the path of least resistance. I know that's a quote probably from that email. And that's understandable. But you do have to see the perspective that in the grand scheme of things, it's not a huge part of their job. Now, on the flip side, it is still part of the job, and you are still promoting your kids. You get back to that. It's for the kids. Well, is that one of the biggest lies ever told? Is that like, I love you too? people always default to that when it's kind of like, but it's for the kids. You know, you take it with a grain of salt. I think at the end of the day, your responsibility is promoting your school, promoting your student, in this case, promoting your student athletes. And if that means, you get a few more headaches, by getting 15, 20 more kids at a game and getting them excited about it. Well, hopefully that makes you a little more excited and the pride that they take in your school. I just know everybody is in a different situation. We have administrators that might be one administrator over 500 or 600 kids, and maybe at another school they've got a principal, an assistant, an athletic director, and everybody has very defined roles.
Sure.
So there's a lot of variables there. So to be completely fair, I get it. I'm very much a proponent of supporting who you are and where you come from. And in order to do that, we got to have a little bit of this, and maybe we ask for a little bit of headaches. But I do understand the other side of it, depending on the overall situation.
Well, I think what's interesting here, obviously, as an educator, I understand what goes in the classroom, on in the classroom, is really, really important. I basically spend an entire career as my job to motivate kids. I fight it every day. And I must motivate them, make them care to want to learn a language arts lesson or a social studies lesson. I obviously need parent help. And a lot of the reason I think teaching today compared to 10 years ago for me is becoming more and more difficult is because of some of this extracurricular stuff, maybe not getting viewed with the same importance. I guess, even as an educator, I remember what it was like to be 14, 15, 16 years old and someone gave me the suggestion, do we need some clubs or some advisors to teach them? No different than having a student council advisor or a pep band advisor or so forth. I guess people not worry about it as much. And I understand sports can be the high school class. I guess if I look back into high school, what I'm saying is this. 2,000 people come watch basketball and another 400 or 500 sit out in the commons to watch a game in Uniota. I didn't have 2,000 people come watch me take a science test. So why do I say that? I say that in terms of understanding that you've got to find some things that motivate kids and then you make them want to be a part of it. I think what we've lost a little bit through this generation of where we're scared to have a little bit of debate and we're scared to have some different things is we've maybe lost the opportunity to get kids involved in some things that are fun that you can hold over their head. Because at the end of the day, and I think you'll agree as an administrator, tell me if I'm wrong, Jeremy, the number one ability to really continue to have discipline in the classroom and throughout the schools is to constantly have things that you're able to hold over the kids, for lack of a better term, that, hey, here's what I need you to do and here's what I'm going to do for you. Do you kind of follow what I'm saying here a little bit in terms of it's no different than eligibility in the classroom? Hey, I know you probably don't care about your social studies junior high test score, but if you're going to fail, you're not going to be able to play sports, or you're not going to be able to do this, or you're not going to be able to do this.
Right, and that's fair. I see that perspective. I think the biggest thing is you just want kids to be a part of something. So if you can't play on the basketball team or you can't play on the football team, you can certainly come out and support and feel like you're part of something and have some sort of positive interaction that associates you.
You said it much better than I did. The pep section, in other words, can be another team, if you will. It's another club. Yes.
It's ownership. And to have ownership in something, you talk about making deals with kids. You're not going to do things on your terms. So as an adult, as an administrator, as a teacher, whatever it is, you know, if it's all on your terms, you know, you're going to be fighting a losing battle. You've got to go and meet them someplace that they want to be. And then you might in turn get something that you want out of them later with that relationship, that's established, that's created.
Well, certainly good stuff. Great feedback. Obviously, crowd behavior and pep sections and different things is something we've had a lot of opinions come on. There's even a couple other things in the inbox there that we probably won't have time to include this week. But perhaps if we continue to get some feedback off of this, we'll perhaps make a little bit of a bigger section in the weeks to come. But you know, Jeremy, really enjoyed the show this week. We'll continue to encourage people to get involved, Facebook and Twitter. And we'll see what that can generate in terms of some of these topics and some upcoming shows. So until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the fine people at DBK Media Services, and for Jamie Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.